So what did our founding fathers really believe and teach? And was America in any sense ever a Christian nation?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, we had posted the video on Facebook before I was actually able to look at it myself with my schedule yesterday. It was getting hundreds of thousands of views. I'm talking about a video, undercover video, that was taken of a major player at Planned Parenthood, a senior medical supervisor of Planned Parenthood, talking very casually over dinner, sipping wine, talking casually about baby parts and the sale of aborted baby parts. When I actually watched the video, I'd read the text. When I actually watched the video, I was just stirred, sickened, as so many others were. Wrote about it last night. And as I'm looking on our website, just the excerpts that we posted on our Facebook site went absolutely viral. Within the first 10 hours, 500,000 views, more than 2 million people reached through it. So check out what I've written about this, as Planned Parenthood actually comes up with ridiculously lame excuses and tries to speak of the humanitarian work that they're doing. Absolutely horrific. You'll find that on my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. For the article, click on Latest Articles. To watch the video, go to my YouTube channel, askdrbrown.org. Just click on the YouTube channel or on Latest Videos there. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Wrote an article a few weeks back or a few months back, and I linked that article to my new article about Margaret Sanger, arguably the architect of the greatest genocide in human history. Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood. Let her be exposed for who she was, for her very radical ideas, for what lies at the heart of Planned Parenthood, for its racism, for its viewing of the lower class and the poor and other races as weeds that needed to be exterminated. Find out why Planned Parenthood has so many clinics in the inner city. Shocking news, but may Planned Parenthood be exposed. May our president be shamed for saying of them a couple years back, God bless you, Planned Parenthood. All right, today we're going to have a fascinating discussion with author Joshua Charles. He'll be joining me in the next segment. Joshua is a young man who is accomplished well beyond his years. He has worked together with one other prominent author, and co-author a New York Times best-selling book. He's got a great heart to stand with Israel and the Jewish people. But he has done massive research on the Founding Fathers. Massive research on what they actually taught, what they actually wrote, what they actually believed. How, quote, Christian was America in the past? Can our country function effectively as a nation if it is divorced from its faith roots? Were the Founding Fathers mainly deists who believed in a creator God, but one who is not personally involved with the world? Does that really matter? Were there atheists and agnostics among them that influenced our founding thought? Or was there a strong biblical Christian base that flows like a powerful stream at the base of our nation, the United States of America? We'll be talking to Joshua. He's got a new book out called Liberty's Secrets. And I tell you, one a selling point for the book, Dennis Prager wrote the foreword to the book. Not easy to see that happen. You won't see his name often in the foreword to a book. And he praises it to the moon. So we come back, Joshua Charles. If you have a question for my guest, if you want to challenge some of what we're talking about, 866-34-TRUTH, the number to call.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast, 866-34-TRUTH. This is Michael Brown, your listener-sponsored voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. My guest right now is a young man named Joshua Charles. He is accomplished well beyond his years, and his new book, Liberty's Secrets, has a foreword by Dennis Prager. And Joshua has done what I really appreciate, which is go to the primary sources. In other words, out of the horse's mouth. Not what someone says about George Washington's writings, not what someone says about Thomas Jefferson's writings, not what someone says about other writings or speeches or opinions of our founding fathers, Benjamin Franklin and others, but rather out of the horse's mouth. What did they write? What did they actually say? What did they actually believe? Liberty's Secrets, The Lost Wisdom of America's Founders, with a foreword by Dennis Prager. Joshua, it is great to have you on The Line of Fire. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. It's an honor to be here.
Joshua, how old are you right now?
I'm 27, as of 27, March.
27, as of March. And how long have you had an interest in this subject?
In some way or another, probably since high school. I kind of became politically conscious in the Bush-Gore election. I was in seventh grade at the time, and I just remember the adults constantly talking about who the next president was going to be. So probably since then, on one level or another, I've been interested in politics. And since I was a kid, I've been interested in history. So, but as far as the founders, probably since high school, and then it's just increased and been very serious the past 6 or 7 years.
Right. And just the introduction that you wrote to the book, it indicates a lot of serious, in-depth thought, research. In fact, Dennis Prager was blown away by the amount of research you've done. But I asked for your age for another reason. Among your peers, those that you studied with in college, what's being taught at the universities, what your generation generally tends to believe, is there a lot of revisionism? Is there a lot of rewriting of American history or recasting of our past that you feel is inaccurate?
Oh, definitely. I think your introduction really caught the heart of it. What happens is, it seems to me, is that it's one historian's interpretation piled on top of another historian's interpretation. So, and I have nothing against historians having interpretations. I just wrote a book, and I tried to write it as objectively as possible, but you know, I'm a human being, so I'm just as subject to a bias as much as anyone else. But what happens is, like you were saying, you lose what came from the original fountain. You lose what these men, and in some cases, some really quite extraordinary women, what they actually said, and that just kind of gets lost over time. And so, what happens as far as the founders, as far as I can tell, in a lot of universities, one of two things. One, they're either totally neglected, which is dangerous, or two, they're totally misrepresented. And so those, by and large, are the two largest phenomena that I've noticed.
All right, so the revisionist history of America, how does that read? What kind of country is this? How were we founded? Who are we? What's the revisionist history that a lot of young people believe today?
Well, I think probably the most pernicious one is that America is a country that was founded on oppression, and we need to disregard the founders entirely because some, and I emphasize some, own slaves. And so that's the crux of the narrative. There's a lot of different ways it could go with that, so if you've got a specific question, more than happy to go the direction you would like to go.
No, build on that. Build on the prevailing narrative, the kind of anti-American narrative.
Well, what concerns me the most and what I found most surprising in a good way about the founders overall, now they had different opinions. They were not a monolithic group. And we can't really, you know, look at them like they controlled everything in society at the time. They certainly had a large degree of influence. You know, Franklin, Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, the kind of the bigger names. But they weren't, control room people who were controlling every little thing in the society. In some sense, they felt at the mercy of events just as much as many of us do today. But what I really found very interesting and inspiring and encouraging and very wise is their knowledge of two things, human nature and human history. And so they saw what I would, I've, you know, people always ask me, is this a Christian nation? It depends on how you define Christian nation. The way I define it is, in which I would say, yes, we are a Christian nation, is we're a nation without which without Judeo-Christian principles, we would be nothing. The principles which founded our country, created by the Creator, given rights, the equality before the law, all those are fundamentally Judeo-Christian concepts. Whether the men who espoused them or not were Orthodox in every way, that's another issue. But they are concepts which depend on a Judeo-Christian understanding. And so when it comes to human nature, and you see this all throughout the founders' writings, there's this acknowledgement that I see in Judeo-Christian thought, which I don't really see anywhere else, and that's the dual nature of man. One, his ability to do amazing, great things, but also, number two, his degradation, his proneness to sin, to do bad things, to do selfish things, to be greedy, ambitious, and seek power for oneself. So there's these two things, and the founders incorporated both into our systems. And then they looked at history, and they saw this exemplified over and over again. And contrary to what some people think, the history lessons they drew from were not just 18th century. There are certainly some aspects of the Constitution that are very much derived from 18th century norms of thought. But a lot of it goes back to the Greeks and the Romans. And, John Adams, for example, wrote a huge book totaling over 1,000 pages about where he's drawing from numerous examples, Greek, Roman, but also tons of European examples. So I say that to answer your question this way. What I think we miss a lot today, and especially my generation, it seems like we're really lacking a good understanding of human nature. We seem to think that our desires, our feelings, our emotions are the cruxes of reality. And instead of nature, the nature of man, the nature of history, the fact that, yes, we can do great things, but we've also got to watch it, that very balanced understanding seems to be missing. And so what happens is just we try to make whatever is inside be expressed outside, and we don't make any distinction. So, for example, when it comes to slavery, this is a point I brought up with a lot of young people. We were born into a world, particularly my generation, we were born totally after the civil rights. Your generation kind of lived through all of that. But my generation, we're civil rights was done, at least as far as the legal accomplishment of it. And when we've been born into a world where slavery and racism are accomplished moral victories. Not that there's still work to do, of course. We're hardly a perfect society, as we've been seeing the last few months. But they're established moral facts. And they have been established moral facts among many people throughout history. So people like William Wilberforce, even people like the founders in some respects. But so what concerns me, though, is that so many people today, particularly young people, seem to assume that if they were born into the founders' world, they would have been as anti-slavery, as anti-racism today.
Yep.
And that's just not true. I don't think that's an honest reading of human nature. And I'd like to think I would be, and I'm sure everybody would like to think they would. And who knows, maybe they would, maybe I would, maybe you would. But I can't say for sure. And what I can say is that the founders were born into a world, every single one of them, where slavery was still normal. And I don't think the outright racism that became, Southern chattel slavery was fully developed in the 18th century, but it was certainly going that direction. And so they were born into a world where slavery, where racism was much more common, literally right out of the cradle. I think Thomas Jefferson inherited a bunch of slaves when he was a teenager. At the same with George Washington. And the fact that they went from that world that they were born into, and did they have failings? Was there moral hypocrisy? There's a lot of different answers to that, a lot of details. But overall, yes, there were. But the caveat is that they were born to a world where this was normal, and the world they left us was one that was vastly improved and much better able to deal with it. And so we have to judge people on that. If we were just judging based on slavery, we'd have to throw out Plato. We'd have to throw out Aristotle. There'd be a lot of really amazing people in history. Confucius, he'd be a misogynistic, really mean guy for a lot of people. But you know, Confucius has a lot of wise things to say. Sun Tzu has a lot of wise things to say. But a lot of these people didn't believe things that were totally okay with 21st century, normative ethics. And so,
let me just jump in. We've got a break coming up. But the verse, of course, I was thinking of is when Jesus says to the Jewish leaders, the hypocritical leaders in Matthew 23, if we had lived in the days of our ancestors, we would not have taken part in shedding of the blood of the prophets. And then Jesus says, you're about to shed the blood of the greatest prophet of them all. I've spoken to people at pro-life rallies and said, if we'd lived in the days of slavery, we would have done something. And yet we don't lift a finger for the pro-life movement. Let's explore this some more. Let's ask the question, if the founding fathers countenanced an America without God or faith in the center.
It's fire we want, for fire we please.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. It is my delight to be with you on the broadcast today. And my guest, Joshua Charles, who's the author of a new book, Liberty's Secrets, about the Founding Fathers, about what they really believed and taught, based on massive research that he's done. Dennis Prager in the foreword says the book has the makings of a classic. Joshua, there's a well-known quote, goes back to one of our Founding Fathers, that basically says that the nature of government that we had was based on having a people of faith. There are several quotes to that effect. But the first question is, I'm sure you're well familiar with the quote I'm speaking of. Maybe you could share it with our listeners. But the question is, if we continue in the direction we're going today with this constant assault on our religious foundations and now freedoms of religion getting trumped, amazingly enough, by sexual orientation, gender identity issues, which would have been not mind-boggling to the Founding Fathers, beyond conception to the Founding Fathers. But if you mess with the spiritual ecology of the nation, so to say, does that make it impossible for us to function properly based on the philosophy of the founders? So first, what was the most famous quote to this effect? You have it in your book, of course, but for our listeners. And then my follow-up question, can we function as a nation without faith in the center?
No, that's a short answer. And the quote is from John Adams. The Constitution was meant to govern over a moral and religious people. It's wholly inadequate to the governance of any other. Or yep. Something very, very close to that effect. The founders, this is actually the longest chapter in the whole book. It's actually roughly a third of the book, this one chapter, because there's a lot of different strands to it. But no, you're right. Faith was at the center. And the reason why I talk a lot about the divergence between the American and the French revolutions, they were ostensibly based on the same principles. That's what Thomas Jefferson thought. And he later, decades later, admitted to John Adams that he had been wrong and Adams had been right. But basically, in the American Revolution, self-government, that entire enterprise, was seen as dependent upon men and women having a moral compass. I think Edmund Burke put it very well. He said, basically, the less control there is inside, the more there must be outside. And so liberty is predicated... What is really bothersome today and really distressing is that liberty, like you were saying, it's kind of become the sexual autonomy thing. That's the latest stretched version of it, away from what our founders intended. But liberty for them was not simply a sphere of action idea, meaning I get to do this, I get to do these are the things I can do, these are the things I can't do. Liberty for them was a moral proposition. And I would ask many people today who want to get God out of society, where do we get our rights from? And, of course, there was the CNN interview, I think it was Mr. Cuomo a few months ago, was saying, you know, no, we get our rights from government. And that's totally antithetical to the founders' idea of liberty. But people who could only govern themselves could be fit to be free. So the idea was if people were under God, they would know that they are not the final authority, which is really, really important. You know, de Tocqueville, I quote this in the book, he had witnessed a judge in, I think it was New York, I could be wrong, but he was talking about a situation where he was watching an American judge, and a witness was being brought in, and back then they would swear on the Bible and before God that they'd be telling the truth. And the man refused to do so because he was an atheist. Well, the judge didn't admit his testimony, and he couldn't take part in the trial. And the idea was not you have to be some Orthodox Christian on every single particular, you know, Nicene Creed and all that stuff. The idea was, do you think you're the final authority, or do you think God is? And you know, we can argue about theology, but that provided the essential moral glue to the American Republic so that people could have a sphere of action, but it was morally defined. I love how John Adams put it. He defined the American vision of liberty as, it's just beautiful. He said, our virtuous vision of a kingdom of the just. That's how he defined it. And so when the founders, when Jefferson and Adams and Franklin on that committee that wrote the Declaration of Independence, when they, of course Jefferson at the forefront, wrote life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, we today take happiness as personal gratification, personal fulfillment. I forget exactly what Francis Schaeffer called it, but something about, you know, this kind of therapeutic deism where God is just there to make us happy. Yep. For the founders, happiness was a classically rooted idea, and it was basically the good life and moral and virtuous living. It went back to Cicero, went back to many theologians, Thomas Aquinas, John Locke, where, you know, basically saying the immoral man, the non-virtuous man cannot be happy. That was the idea of happiness. It wasn't just personal fulfillment.
Right. And so the same way with biblical language in the Psalms, happy is the man. Some translations say blessed, but the Hebrew is literally the happinesses of the man who doesn't walk in the counsel of the ungodly, etc. Or in the Beatitudes when Jesus says, blessed are. In Greek, it's the same thing. It's truly happy are those. So it's not carnal happiness. And again, look, friends, we go back to the beginning words of the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created
exactly
equal, not just equal as human beings or equal because equality is a good thing, but created equal, that they're endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. So if you're going to find rights for the creation, but divorce that creation from the creator, you completely undermine the whole foundation. Hey, Josh, I've got a bunch more questions I want to ask you. I want to take some calls from our listeners. You can weigh in at 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. You'll find this to be a fascinating read, and it breaks things down by chapters, founding prophets, human nature, and history is the opening chapter. There's a whole chapter on slavery in the book. Again, the author, Joshua Charles, the book, Liberty's Secrets. If you're not convinced about the book, read the foreword by Dennis Prager, and you'll want to get cartloads of the book to give out to folks. And it is wonderful to see the younger generation paving the way to set the record straight. Really excited this week. I've been waiting for this week for many weeks, but we're ready to do this now. We're taking pre-orders on my new book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution. In fact, Joshua researched some quotes for the Founding Fathers for me and grabbed a few that I was able to use in the book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, Where Homosexual Activism is Really Going and How to Turn the Tide. It will give you hope. It will give you courage. It will give you strategy for the long haul. If Jesus doesn't come back first, I believe that gay activism will defeat itself in many ways and that those who live godly lives will write the last chapter of the book. So you can pre-order. This is collector's edition, hardcover from the first printing. I'll sign it, and they're numbered as they come in from the printer. We number them here. Then I sign them to you individually. $50 postage paid. It's a collector's edition. We only do it once with the first printing of the book. To order, call 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Once more, that's 1-800-278-9978. For a video that'll tell you more, go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the line of fire. My joy to welcome to the broadcast Joshua Charles. Joshua and I have been interacting on a number of fronts. He's got a great heart for Israel and for the younger generation to grab hold of God's purposes for Israel and his love for the Palestinians as well. But Joshua's really specialized in researching the founding fathers, researching early American history, and has put together the results of a lot of study in his new book, Liberty's Secrets. Joshua, let's take a couple of calls here. We'll start in Wappinger Falls. Nope. We won't go to Wappinger Falls, New York. We'll go to Washington, D.C. Michael, welcome to the line of fire.
Hey, thank you, Dr. Brown. How are you today?
Doing well, thank you.
Good. Doctor, my question is, when one would say the founding fathers of this great nation were God-fearing men, how can that be justified of saying they were God-fearing men when they unjustly enslaved a race of people? Because in order to make slavery work, you had to be brutal. You had to be menacing. You had to be threatening. You know, slavery is the word itself doesn't entail what it took to maintain slavery. You had to be brutal, you know, to make slavery work. If a man raised up to want to protect his son or daughter, and the wife or the mother would be screaming for help, and that black male showed any sign of wanting to protect, that white slave master, he disciplined in such a cruel way, you know. Don't you ever act like you want to be a man, a father, or a loving husband. So, in order to make slavery work, let's move beyond the word slavery and look at what it took to maintain slavery. Mm-hmm. So were these God-fearing men who established such an evil and brutal institution?
Yeah, Michael, let's get a response from Joshua, but I love the way that you put humanity on that question. Take us away from a term and talk about part of what it really meant. Practical day-to-day basis. Go ahead, Joshua.
Sure. Well, that's a great question. I really appreciate it. And I want to be very, very sensitive when I answer it. There is a whole chapter on the book on this, and I don't claim in that one chapter to be able to go into all the nuances of this, of which there are many. What I would say is a few things. Number one, the founders did not establish slavery. That is just not true. Jefferson, like I said in the earlier part of the broadcast, inherited a bunch of slaves when he was a teenager, as did Washington. And here was kind of the moral conundrum. I'm really trying to put myself in their shoes. There's a letter that Jefferson wrote to a young, I believe it was his son-in-law in the early 1800s, right after he was done being president. And the son-in-law basically wrote him saying, you know, I want to free my slaves. This is a horrible institution. It's evil, you know, et cetera. Jefferson completely agreed with him, but Jefferson was saying, here's why you shouldn't free your slaves. And Jefferson's argument was basically, these people have no education, they have limited skills, and if you were to emancipate them just outright with the state of society right now, they would get picked up by another person who would become their new master, and you could not guarantee that they would be treated nearly as well as you treat them. You provide clothing for them, food for them, housing for them, but if you free them, they're completely on their own. They'll be susceptible to other people picking them up, and they probably won't be treated nearly as well. And so these are very difficult things to talk about, to be perfectly honest with you, but that was somewhat of the moral conundrum that many of these fellows were in. Now, that's one part of the
All right, you
answer.
Can tell you what, you can finish the second part on the other side. Michael, the question is acute and important, and one that we don't sweep under the rug. What we want to emphasize, though, is that these men helped to set up a system that overthrew slavery, that freed the slaves, and it was the system they set up that led to it.
Flame, send the
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We're going to take one more moment on the important question about slavery, about the God-fearing nature of the Founding Fathers, with my guest, Joshua Charles, author of an exciting new book, Liberty's Secrets. Tell you what the Founding Fathers really taught, really believed, and why there's so much wisdom in what they had to say for America today, with a foreword by Dennis Prager. So, Joshua, there was a part two to your answer. And of course, there was division even in early America over the issue of slavery. And
yeah.
I do want to reinforce what you did say, which was that at the outset of the broadcast, that the principles that they lived by, the things they set up, ultimately led to freedom for the slaves. The idea that all men are created equal is one of the ways to overturn the Dred Scott decision, a horrific decision of the Supreme Court, to emphasize the humanity of the slave. It's just a fellow human being. But there was a part two to this important question. So back to you.
Part two and three. Part two is really quick.
Okay,
go ahead. The second part is we need to remember that many of the founders either didn't own slaves or were actively involved in emancipation schemes. Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, Alexander Hamilton. And of the ones who did own slaves, this is something that most people don't know about. George Washington, not a single one of his letters, same with Jefferson, same with Madison, offer any support of slavery, and in fact acknowledged the hypocrisy of it, which is why when Washington died, his will specified he freed every single one of the slaves he owned. He called on his descendants to set up a fund that would provide their clothing, their food, their education, so they could be of use and have a profession, have an occupation, so they could make a living.
How come we don't know about that? Most of us.
I think a lot of the reason is because if people can win on this issue, they have an excuse to throw out everything that the founders said, which would, of course, a lot of what they said is profoundly damaging and does profound harm to a lot of the agendas of some people today. So
right,
I think that's
right.
The reason why. Part three, like I said, there's a whole chapter about this on the book, chapter eight, and I call it, every chapter is, you know, a title and then liberty's something. And the chapter on slavery is slavery, liberty's hypocrisy. So I don't try and shy away from this, but I do quote Frederick Douglass. There's a great speech he gave in the 1850s called What to the Slave is the Fourth? Referring, of course, to the 4th of July. Now, a lot of people, they selectively read that speech, and they presume that it's very anti-founders. That's not the case at all. He praises the founders a lot in that speech. One, there's a really powerful line. He actually uses the biblical example. He says, you know, the Jews, back when Jesus was around, you know, would reject Jesus, and they'd say, oh, because we have Abraham as our father. And he said, you, pointing to the current generation of Americans he was looking at, you say Washington is our father, Washington who couldn't die before freeing his slaves, and yet you build his monument with the blood and sweat of slaves.
Mm.
So Frederick Douglass used Washington as an example of an anti-slavery sentiment. Like you were saying, he uses the Constitution. He said it's a glorious liberty document. And he talks about the Bible and God and liberty and how the founder, he said, mark that generation, the founding generation. He said, they did their duty. Now it's your time to do yours. We need to realize something, that the founders, the American Revolution was not predicated upon righting every wrong in the world. It just wasn't possible. That was actually one of the reasons why I think the French Revolution failed. It presumed to be able to revolutionize everything at the same time, revolutionize politics, revolutionize religion, revolutionize, you know, France's geopolitical situation, revolutionize culture, all at the same time. And human nature is just not susceptible to being able to deal with and take upon such a burden all at once. And so the American Revolution was fundamentally different in that it was intended to set up a system where these rights could be, where these wrongs could be righted. The metaphor I put in the book is, you know, the Founding Fathers wrenched from the earth this gem, this priceless gem of self-government. When they wrenched it from the earth, it still had mud on it, it still had dirt on it. But they wrenched it from the earth nonetheless, passed it to their posterity, fully aware that their posterity would have to shine it up and get it in better shape. But that was the gift they gave us. And if we, you know, the fact that this generation, which is still largely pro-abortion, you know, we blind ourselves to our own fallenness and our own prejudices in our own time, if we act as if slavery is some, you know, catch-all for discarding the founders. But when we look in our own day, more children have been aborted. Of course, this became just a lot more relevant as yesterday with the horrible story about Planned Parenthood selling these body parts.
Yep.
You know, in my opinion, this is probably controversial, but in many ways, abortion is far worse. You know, a slave had 2 feet to run with and 2 fists to punch with at the very least, as horrible as it was. What does a child in the womb have? It's the most innocent human being possible in the most vulnerable position possible. And yet there's been almost 60 million murdered in the United States. So this is why I think this is a major blind spot for this generation. And it's why so many people can curse the founders for slavery when actual slaves, such as Booker T. Washington, Frederick Douglass, actually praise them vociferously. That's a really interesting dichotomy, which we should take note of. The final point is I quote Alexander Stevens, who is the vice president of the Confederacy. Obviously, that's been another hot issue in the last few months. There's a speech that he gave called the Cornerstone Speech. It was in 1861 toward the beginning of the war. And in it, he specifically said they were rejecting the claims in the Declaration of Independence about God creating all men equal. He said Jefferson was wrong, and he said the Confederacy was the first government in the history of the world to be based on this, quote, great moral, physical, and philosophical truth, that the Negro is subservient to the white man, basically. Mm. He said the Confederacy was the first government in the world to be based on that, quote, great principle. And he specifically disabused himself of Jefferson and the Declaration.
Yep.
So
you have to. Yeah. Yeah. And Joshua, that's a brilliant, comprehensive answer. Michael, thank you for pressing the question. Much appreciated.
It's a great question.
Yeah. Much appreciated. And of course, people could debate the abortion slavery comparison. We posted something today with Joseph Mengele and a Planned Parenthood leader and said, fair comparison or not. We're talking about horrific evils in every case. Horrific evils, no matter where you put them on the scale. But look, the fact is, and that's why we're talking about liberty, 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 liberty divorced from God, liberty divorced from God creating us equal, liberty divorced from the humanity of every human being. You cannot have liberty without this. That's why you're not going to have an atheist-ruled country where you end up really having principles of liberty. Joshua, let me press in on one other thing. By the way, I just noticed this. Someone posted on Facebook a moment ago. This interview is excellent. Joshua Charles is enlightening. I've never heard of him before today. Well, hopefully a lot more folks will be listening to what you have to say in the coming days.
Can I give you a quick quote based on what you just said about you'll never see an atheist rule a free country?
There is a
great line I read from John Adams. He was talking with a friend in England in 1791. They were talking about the French Revolution, which, of course, is predicated on very anti-Christian principles in many cases.
Yeah.
And there's a line in the letter where John Adams says, I own to you, I know not what to make of a republic of 30 million atheists. So
wow.
He kind of supported the point you were just making. And I include that in the book among many
I mean, look, the whole Animal Farm thing, the whole 1984 thing with George Orwell, it's the way things play out. We're even seeing it with gay activism, that once you get away from certain foundations of humanity and God's intention for humanity, the ones that were bullied become the bullies. And the shift just comes culturally. All right, we've just got a minute and a half before this break. If you can get this in, what do you object to in the recent Supreme Court ruling in terms of their reading of the 14th Amendment?
I include a part
aside from everything, but go ahead.
Yeah, sure. I'll contain my analysis to the constitutional aspects. I'll leave the policy reasons behind marriage to another discussion. But as far as a constitutional analysis, the founders, I include a lot of this in the book, provide extensive thoughts on how the Constitution should be interpreted. Washington in his farewell address, Jefferson in his letters, Madison in his letters. And they make very clear that words have meaning. And it would have been shocking to the people who wrote the 14th Amendment that what has been done in the name of the work that they produced, which of course was done to help us ameliorate our original sin of slavery and racial prejudice, that it's been used for this. And marriage has always been within the near exclusive domain of the state. And I say near exclusive because the federal government might have jurisdiction in a diversity case, but even that, they're applying state law. And so our system is based on a complex system of checks and balances, and one of those is the federal government versus the state government, and that the state governments are supposed to have an exclusive set of jurisdiction over areas of civic life. And this was one of those areas. And so one thing that really worries me, not just in our law, but even in our discourse, it's like every single story across our country is nationalized. And that's very, very dangerous.
Got it. All right. The book, Liberty's Secrets, the author, Joshua Charles. Hey, this young man knows what he's talking about. You'll enjoy the book as I have as I've been going through it.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. My guest, Joshua Charles, author of the new book, Liberty's Secrets. He's got a quote at the beginning of the book from John Adams. Posterity, you will never know how much it costs the present generation to preserve your freedom. I hope you'll make a good use of it. If you do not, I shall repent in heaven that I ever took half the pains to preserve it. So, Joshua, real quick, we've just got a few minutes before we're done here. Throw out for me some of your favorite nuggets, some of the things that you enjoyed learning the most and that you think would be the most valuable for this generation to take hold of.
Oh, man, that's so difficult. The publisher gave me a word limit. I won't say what it was, but I gave them about 10,000 more words than the word limit for that reason.
Well, that's 10,000 more words. It's not bad. That's not bad at all, actually.
Yeah. Well, there's a quote from John Adams I looked up during the break that I really loved. He said he was replying back to a college that had written him, and he said, "When you look up to me with confidence as the patron of science, liberty, and religion, you melt my heart. These are the choicest blessings of humanity. They have an inseparable union. Without their joint influence, no society can be great, flourishing, or happy." What a stunning difference between today, where people just kind of casually assume that faith and science or reason or whatever they want to call it are opposed. Many of our founders saw it as quite the opposite. There are a lot of things that James Madison wrote about the Constitution, about how it should be properly interpreted, that are really quite stunning, especially in light of recent developments, talking about you can't interpret the Constitution just however you want to do it. You can't just impose meaning. You've got to take it in the way that those who passed it meant, because the people actually voted on it. That's the whole point. There's great things that Washington said. There's a lot of practical things in this book, too. I hope people realize that, just about how you live life, how you be a good person. There's a great quote from Washington to his nephew talking about, be generous to everybody as much as your purse will allow you to, always remembering the estimation of the widow's mite. Of course, referring to the story in the Gospels about the widow giving her two mites and Jesus saying she gave more than all the people who were pouring in bags of money. Of course, John Adams has made a comeback, I think, since David McCullough's book and the HBO miniseries, and I certainly probably overall find him to be my favorite founder. But him and Jefferson have some really interesting thoughts on banking and corporations, which I also include. You know, there's the whole, I actually think this is something which many on the right and the left can agree on, that there is excessive corporate influence in our government. And something has to be done about that. We disagree about the way to do that, but there's actually some really amazing stuff in there about fiat currency, banking, corporate interests getting in bed with the government, and how if the government doesn't stay within its constitutional limits, that's really dangerous, and here's why. Because once they do, they can get in a position where they can offer favors. They can offer exemptions. When we look at our tax code today, you know, it's 70,000-some-odd pages. And it's all filled with loopholes that lawyers and lobbyists have carved out for themselves. And that's what happens when you go beyond the limits, because when you become a government, go from being a government of limited powers to unlimited powers, then you have James Madison basically predicted the rise of the bureaucratic state. because of that. When Congress went beyond, there'd have to be somebody who could make these decisions in a quicker way than it would take for 435 people rather to agree on something. And so that would be the executive branch, and that's exactly what's happened. I also include some generous portions of quotes from de Tocqueville. His book, Democracy in America, is massive, but it's absolutely stunningly amazing. He was one of the most prophetic writers I've ever read. And I included him because he was making observations on American society on the generation that had just come after the founders. So he was very well read in the founders and offered some really profound thoughts on all sorts of subjects. There's a quote prophecy that he made at the end of his book about what the rise of tyranny in America would look like. I include that, an extensive quote at the end, in the second to last chapter. It's absolutely incredible. I really encourage people to read that. And finally, I make a point in the introduction. There's a book that I actually think is more important than mine, and it's called Amusing Ourselves to Death by Neil Postman. I've been recommending this book for about a decade. And it really, besides the Bible, I think it really hones in on the plague of our modern media-driven culture. And so what happens is people go for the superficial answers on everything. They think Googling something or getting it on Wikipedia is sufficient research and backing. And I wanted to do something different with the founders. Whatever you think about them, if you can't get over the slavery stuff, I completely understand. But at the end of the day, if you get a car, even if the car isn't in the best shape, you look at the owner manual. You don't look at the owner manual for a computer. You look at the owner manual for a car. And at the very least, it behooves us to understand these men who put together the DNA, the software, whatever metaphor you want to use for our nation, and what it was designed to do. And I think people will be not just perhaps made more nervous in some ways, just how eerily ominous and prophetic some of their utterances were, but also very inspired, very encouraged. These were amazing men, imperfect as they were, and it just teaches. The more I read the founders, the more I recognize the great truths. We need heroes. We need mentor-type people in our lives. But we also need to make sure we keep our focus on God and not men, because we'll lose our focus if we go that way as well.
Yeah, Josh, well said. And friends, very few of us are going to have the time, the energy, the ability to do all the research that Joshua has done. He's done it for you. The book is Liberty's Secrets. Hey, thanks for being so articulate and passionate. Must appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
All right. Friends, just want to mention to you again, the quicker you call, the better numbered book that you get. But every numbered book is very special for us to send out. We'll be having the first printing of Outlasting the Gay Revolution. It's due out early September. We'll have the first printing as soon as it comes in. We only do this at the beginning when a book is published. As soon as it comes in, we number them. They're beautifully numbered. And then I'll sign each one. You can order multiple copies for different people. Just give us the names. We'll put a scripture reference in there. I'll sign it personally. And then we have the joy of sending this out to you from the first printing. It's a hardcover. This is a collector's edition. We'll always be signing books upon request and at book tables, but this is the only time. It's the first printing, and it is numbered and signed, $50, postage paid. It's also a way for you not only to be blessed and to have this, but it's also a way for you to be a blessing to us and stand with us. We receive so much encouragement from so many of you that by God's grace, this broadcast is making a difference. Someone sent us an email yesterday and just said that this broadcast is their lifeline on a daily basis. I'm humbled to hear that. We do take it that seriously. I do. Our entire team does. But this is a way for you to partner with us. So to order your advanced copy, numbered and signed, as soon as they come in early September, call 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. One more time, that's 1-800-278-9978. If you'd like to watch a video that'll tell you more about the book, go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. You'll see right on the homepage where you can click, and there's a video that will tell you more. My bottom line today, yes, the founding fathers were imperfect, but the reality is they understood that God had to be at the center of our nation. Otherwise, we'd have a nation that was no longer free. Education, problem children, kids that don't seem to know how to learn. How in the world do we fix this?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Boy, I hope this is not the case. I hope this is not the case. But was there any ego battle here between President Obama and Prime Minister Netanyahu when it comes to the Iran deal? Was there any ego battle where he was going to beat the Prime Minister and say, look, it's his quote that Prime Minister Netanyahu cannot stop the Iran deal? Is there anything personal here? Well, the more I read about this, the more disturbed I am. This is Michael Brown. I'm blessed to be with you on The Line of Fire today. I just had a great hour-long interview with Joshua Charles, who's written a tremendous book on the Founding Fathers called Liberty's Secrets. And in a moment, I'm going to be joined by Trace Embry, founder and executive director of Shepherd's Hill Academy. I was just on the air with him on his radio show last week. He's got a lot of fascinating experience and is doing something very unusual with kids who struggle, with some innovative educational approaches. So we're going to talk to Trace. If you are an educator, if you are a parent and you're struggling with your kids' education, if you're a homeschooler, I think you'll be fascinated by this interview I'm about to have with Trace. Number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. So somebody posted on Facebook earlier a comment that I saw it, that I would normally delete immediately, but I decided, yeah, I think I'm going to have a little fun and reply here. A guy named Chad posted, stop lying to people and getting rich in the process. And I wrote back, alas, you're wrong on both accounts. We tell the truth and we don't get rich. Why such bigotry and judgmentalism? Well, he claimed that the video that we put up was misleading about Planned Parenthood, and that obviously I'm getting rich off these things. It's one of these things where you don't even bother to reply to people who are so full of hostility and judging, and not just ways that are ugly, but ways that are completely false. And anyone that's been close to our ministry for years knows that nobody here gets rich doing the work of ministry. If God blessed us with millions of dollars, we'd use it for the work of ministry. If he blessed us with millions of dollars personally, is some unknown rich relative, hey, let God be God. But the fact is nobody here doing ministry is getting rich or living rich. I mean, that's simple reality. But the thing that's funny, though, and I say this quite candidly, is that people have a hard time with truth. People, in order to hold to their views, must demonize you, must degrade you. In order for people to hold to their false narrative, they must degrade you in the process. They must demonize you. Because if they're going to deal with you honestly, and you come with facts and truth and information for them, they don't have much comeback. Oh, they may come back with their opinion about this or that, but when they find out they've demonized you, they've judged you, they've misrepresented you, you know how many people post, you're doing this for money? You know how ridiculous it is? The areas where we take stands are the very areas where you lose money. Being on the radio is something that you have to fund and make happen. Being on the air right now is something we have to fund and make happen in order to do it, where we had to all, as a team, make sacrifices in order to be on the air to do this. Why do people think that way? Well, you get some corrupt guy out there that is getting rich off the gospel. That brings reproach, but it's a way out. It's a way out for people. Rather than dealing with what you're saying, they're going to demonize you. Ah, how about truth? How about truth and reality? How about having discussion based on facts? Is that too hard for some? Hope not.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am not an expert in any shape, size, or form on children's education. I spent many years, really since the early 1980s, in higher education, Bible college, university, seminary education, up through doing PhD seminars and things like that. But I am absolutely not an expert in children's education or in effective methods of children's education. Many of my good friends, their families for years have been homeschoolers to this day. I'm familiar with critiques of some of our current education system, but I want to look at things from a holistic biblical perspective with my guest, Trace Embry. If you have a question you'd like to ask, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884 is the number to call. Trace is the founder and executive director of Shepherd's Hill Academy. And I want to start right there by asking Trace, what is Shepherd's Hill Academy? What led him to start this ministry? So, Trace, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I appreciate being on.
Great to have you. Yes, so what led you to start Shepherd's Hill Academy? What exactly is Shepherd's Hill Academy?
Well, first, what led us to start it, first of all, when God speaks, E.F. Hutton listens. It was one of those things where I went into this kicking and scratching. I did not want to do this. I had no inclination whatsoever. I was a product of the 1980s. He who dies with the most toys wins. I was going to be a millionaire before I was 30. Had three kids and realized that there's something more to life. And long story short, I'm writing a 500-page book called The Miracles of Shepherd's Hill as to how all this came down. But I ended up at Bible College. Submitted to God's will after a series of circumstantial miracles. Ended up at Bible College living in a single-wide mobile home on the campus of Tocoa Falls College. And about midway through our Bible college experience, here I am with three kids and a wife, and the Lord tapped us on the shoulder again and said, you know, you're not going to be the holy man you think you're going to be working in a church. I want to use you in a ministry that's going to require land. So start looking for it. And so we packed the kids up in the minivan. Every weekend we would go out and hit the highways and byways of northeast Georgia. And the first place we came across was an old abandoned farm. It was a drug operation, an illegal drug operation. There was a triple murder involved in the place. It was just abandoned. And my wife and I went out in what we now call Shepherd's Hill, and we took our kids there and basically trespassed and picnicked down that hill overlooking the Blue Ridge Mountains to the north. And we prayed, Lord, if you'll provide this for us, we'll dedicate it 100% to your service. And a year and a half later, it still wasn't for sale, and we'd been out there about every other month in that year and a half praying the same prayer with our kids. And lo and behold, we were on our way to Royston, Georgia, to look at a piece of property, and we saw a magic marker for sale by owner sign on the road leading to Shepherd, what is now called Shepherd's Hill Academy. And we called the phone number, went to a phone booth, called the number, and the man said, I just put that sign out there just a few minutes ago. I said, can you meet us out there? And long story short, with $200 and a handshake, we acquired the property, and we erected a cross on Shepherd's Hill to commemorate where we prayed to receive the property, and a lot has happened since then.
All right, tell you what, Trace, I just want to jump in there. We're having a little problem with the phone connection. Just want to make sure we can get this sharper so we don't miss anything you're saying. So Betsy's just going to check in with you now for a moment. Let me throw something out to you. So to everyone listening, before we come back with Trace, and he's got some fascinating insights. He has taken some major steps of faith so as to reach out to the younger generation. When I say the younger generation, I mean teenagers and younger, and look at ways to wean them from the society in which they live, wean them from many of the addictions, the social and media addictions, put them in a completely different and unusual environment, and then in that setting, teach them and in that sense train them and reprogram them. Let me say candidly, friends, that we face, when I say we, our kids, or in my case, grandkids, our young people today face problems and challenges that no other generation ever had to deal with. Now, they have benefits that no other generations ever had to deal with. Hey, look, just real simple things. The cell phone, everybody having a cell phone, teenagers having their own cars, most people living in air-conditioned homes, people having a color TV in their room with access to everything imaginable and even unimaginable, computers and tablets. And I mean, this stuff is just previous generations wouldn't have even countenanced it. And yet, these things can be terrible distractions. And you couple all of that with, couple that together with the educational environment that we have, which in many ways is not conducive to the best methods of learning. You have some real challenges for the younger generation. Trace, hopefully our connection is better now. So you stepped out in faith. God worked miraculously. What exactly, though, are you doing? So you got this property. You set it up. You stepped away from what would have been a very lucrative career. But God called you to do it. But what exactly is Shepherd's Hill Academy?
Well, after 7 years of roofing houses like migrant workers with my whole family in 8 different states, we bring the money back and built Shepherd's Hill to get it started. There's a series of miraculous events, again, that took place there, including the life and death of our son, who is now buried at the foot of the cross at Shepherd's Hill. And that really started it. Again, I'd be here all day sharing how it happened, but the bottom line is we now have kids from California to New York, every state in between virtually, and 11 other countries that have come to, kids have come to Shepherd's Hill Academy to live in the woods with no running water, no electricity, no digital technology in their living quarters, and basically pulling away for a season in their life from all the negative cultural influences and distractions to get acquainted with their God. And it is incredible the transformations that are taking place in these kids. Now, we do have a fully accredited junior and senior high school here. So between the hours of 8 a.m. and 3 p.m., they do have computers in their classrooms that are totally filtered, and there's a human set of eyes on each one that make sure there's no hocus-pocus going on. But at 3 o'clock, it's back to 18th century living.
Mm. All right, so what happens to these kids when they're with you? You're talking junior high school. Well, let me ask this first. Do they come on their own accord, or do their parents insist on them coming? How do they get there?
Well, these are kids who are 1 foot in jail, 1 foot in the grave, from severe drug addiction to, you know, just your garden variety spoiled brat, ADD, ADHD, ODD, all the DDs, which we know to be ATD, American Teenager Disorder. 70% of the kids that come here on bushel loads of medications are leaving here medication-free. Because we know from science that when you stimulate a kid with positive things, the Word of God, the love of God, good things happen. There's great stimuli taking place in the brain, in the heart, mind, soul of these kids. And they're not going 4 steps, 5 steps backwards with Snoop Dogg and Eminem and Lady Gaga and all the rest, Beyonce and Jay-Z. They don't have access to that horrible entertainment or all the other things that are retarding their spiritual growth. And God has given us the tremendous gift of having our appetites trained and retrained. And when these kids don't have access to some of this hocus-pocus for a period of time, they start acquiring appetites for the million and one things that God says we can enjoy life with. You know, MTV, VH1, BET, and, you know, CMT, are basically saying, Hollywood, Madison Avenue, are basically saying, you know, if it's not sex, drugs, and rock and roll, you're really not living. These kids are getting their childhood back in the areas that they still need to be kids, and they're becoming adults in the areas that they need to start growing up.
And this is obviously doing something that a traditional school setting can't do, and that your average parents can't do. When we come back, Trace, I want to talk about, okay, great, you have this transformation while there. Now they go back to the, quote, real world of today, which in many ways is a surreal world. How do you prepare them? What type of lasting fruit have you had? Also, I was on the air with Trace on his radio program last week, and we had some fascinating discussion about the worldview of educators today and the surreal world in which they live. We'll talk about that. Eye-opening stuff. I mean, think of this. Separate kids from their normal environment and transform their lives. And here's living proof that it actually works.
Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest today is Trace Embry, founder and executive director of Shepherd's Hill Academy. Based in a rural location, young people either in trouble with the law or just messed up in other ways go there. They live in a culture that would be more 18th century in terms of lifestyle, in terms of the way they have to live, the things they do during the day, separated from their iPads and iPhones and video games and everything else. They get immersed and they come out in large number, greatly changed. The website to find out more, shepherdshillacademy.org. Of course, one word, shepherdshillacademy.org. Trace, before we come back to the question of what do you do to prepare the kids to go back into the world in which they normally live, in your evaluation, what is the biggest cause of the massive problems we're having with young people today?
Well, as you know, Michael, culture has a tremendous impact on young people in particular. I mean, some cultures, they love their neighbors, and others, they eat them. I can't help but believe that our culture today, in light of all the digital technology that our kids have access to, is the other parent. And so, you know, I sign off every one of my radio programs with, you know, if you don't train your children, somebody else will. Well, the truth of the matter is somebody already has, and they're doing a pretty good job of it. And so I don't think parents really understand the impact that our culture has on our kids. You know, years ago, we were, as Americans, we come basically from a Judeo-Christian ethic, and the culture had that kind of impact on us. Well, now, in the last 50, 60 years, we've really slid into the abyss, and all you got to do is look at the latest Supreme Court decisions to see what's going on there. Well, our kids are getting a full dose of this, and they have Larry Flint, Bob Guccione, and Hugh Hefner on their hip pocket 24/7, and parents have bought into this idea that this is a just the thing to do in America. And unfortunately, it has brainwashed our kids in a way that they need Jesus. We all need Jesus, but they particularly need Jesus to brainwash them, Jesus who washes dirty brains when we submit our lives to him.
Now, when these kids come and live there, when you talk about 18th century conditions, tell them what it's like. What's a normal day for, like, one of these junior high or high school kids?
Mm-hmm. Well, we party like it's 1899, brother. It's amazing to me. There's a documentary film called Captivated. A lot of it was filmed right here at Shepherd's Hill Academy, and the kids, some of our kids are on there saying exactly how they feel about digital technology after being away from it. And it is incredible how much they realize they don't need it, and some of them don't even want it. Now, there's nothing wrong with digital technology. It's here to stay. It's a tool. Unfortunately, we've used it as a weapon. But our kids, on an average day, will get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. They'll do inspections of their campsites, make their beds. Everything's got to be in order. They come out of the woods, which is about a quarter-mile walk out of the woods onto the main campus, where they'll get breakfast, lunch, and dinner in the cafeteria Monday through Friday. And the reason we have cafeteria food for these kids during the weekday is because they're in school during the day. But on the weekends and Friday evening, it's all cooked at their site. They prepare it all at their site. And so at 3 o'clock when the bell rings in school and they go back to 18th century living, they could be engaged in any number of things. It could be a chapel service. It could be equine therapy. It could be an off-campus event. It could be building or rebuilding their campsites, campus beautification. There are work projects that these kids are involved with to keep them busy, kinetic learning. We drive home apologetics big time. We've got different people that come in from different parts of the country. We've had all-star baseball players, Super Bowl winners, authors, big-name people who come in and share their testimonies and share their experiences with sharing the gospel out there in the real world. We take them off campus to things like Truth for New Generation, Alex McFarland's deal. It's coming up here in September. So they've had the opportunity to meet people like Ben Carson and Eric Metaxas and Johnny Erickson Tata and David Barton, the historian. We drive home history, too, because a lot of these kids, they're not being taught history anymore. So there are things that we're basically doing with these kids that are helping shape a biblical worldview in them. And they're getting what Paul Harvey used to call the rest of the story, because these kids are not hearing this stuff in, you know, back in their public schools and in their neighborhood.
All right, just got a minute for this, and I've got a couple of questions. If you can stand a little longer, I just want to ask you. But real quick, if you can do this in a minute or less, how do you prepare the kids for going back when they're going to be surrounded by all the digital media and distractions?
That's what the year here is all about. We have a year to prepare them to see, as Paul Harvey used to say, the rest of the story, so that they know what this stuff is doing to them on a chemical basis in their brains, so that they know that the lies of Hollywood and Madison Avenue are jamming down their throats. And then in the course of their year, we don't do altar calls. We've never done an altar call in our chapel since we've been here. And there's a reason we don't do that. Kids get saved in their hearts 6, 3, 6, 8 months before they get saved in their head. They come to us and ask Christ into their hearts. Really, they're asking into their head. And it's the Holy Spirit that these kids leave here with, Michael, that they go home with and puts a balance in their life. Now, of course, their parents are getting a ton of education while their kids are getting educated here, too. Aunts, uncles, grandparents, siblings getting saved while their kids are here at a year at Shepherd's Hill.
And you see lasting fruit, don't you?
Oh, my gosh. Youth pastors are being developed. Our goal here is not to make more microcosms of the culture. Our goal is to make change agents to the culture. And you've got to get these kids on board. Pardon the way I say this, but on a crusade to get this nation turned around. They've got, you know, when they get here, they have no idea how we got here as a country. But when they're here for a year at Shepherd's Hill, they realize, wow, to the degree that we've strayed from God's principles, we failed.
Awesome. All right. Awesome, not that we failed, but awesome that these kids grasp it and they want to go out and be world changers. Right. I want to play a fascinating clip. Trace hasn't heard this yet either. I want to get his comments on it. And some shockers about how a lot of educators are thinking today in terms of reality. My guest, Trace Embry, his website, shepherdshillacademy.org. Maybe this would be important for a young person you know who is struggling. All right, I have been waiting for the day when I'm able to do this and so excited to be able to do this week. My new book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, Where Homosexual Activism is Really Going and How to Turn the Tide. Essential reading, a book that right now across America should be read, that will give hope, encouragement, that will explain how gay activism in many ways is self-defeating and will defeat itself if Jesus doesn't come first. Principles for us to live by, 8 principles for us to live by which we can outlast the gay revolution. I've been waiting to give the announcement. The book comes out early September, but right now we're taking pre-orders on a very special edition. It's the first printing. We only do this with the first printing. It's been very popular, so we'll do it again. The first printing, we number them, and then we sign them and inscribe them to you personally. $50 postage paid for the hardcover. 1-800-278-9978 to order. The earlier you order, the better number you get. But every numbered book is special to us. 1-800-278-9978. Or you can order online and watch a video that'll tell you more. Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire. I'm speaking with Trace Embry, founder and executive director of Shepherd's Hill Academy. Trace, you haven't heard this clip, but I want you to respond to it if you feel it's accurate. And it's a very funny YouTube cartoon. I just saw it for the first time earlier today. It's a little over a minute long, but it's how difficult it would be to be a stand-up comedian on a typical liberal campus. Take a listen.
Welcome, everyone, to Comedy Night at University College. Let's be very considerate to our first comedian, Jason Berkelman.
All right. What a good-looking crowd we have tonight.
Don't judge us based on any prevailing oppressive beauty norms.
Oh, okay. Sorry for that. Anyway, I just broke up with my girlfriend.
Relationship is exclusionary and prejudicial.
Okay, so I just flew in, guys, and the snacks on airplane. What, are you allergic to peanuts?
Fear of flying was on a list of trigger warnings we sent you.
Who are these people?
We're the victims of your hate speech.
We'll need to secure a safe place for our protesters.
They seem angry.
And here we go with the tone policing.
Acknowledge your white privilege.
I was going to with some of my jokes. Like this one. I went on vacation in Jamaica.
Racist!
With my dad.
Patriarchist!
He smoked pot, guys! It's funny!
Mansplain the bigot!
Jason, there's at least 8 different genders in the audience right now. They're not all guys.
Well, that now I feel like I can't say anything!
Of course you can, Jason. This is a free speech zone.
Okay. Alright, so, what else is going on here?
All right, Trace, what do you think of that little YouTube clip? Give me your honest feelings.
Well, I think you got a small taste of what our young people have to deal with every day. They're so confused, stressed out. Dr. Richard Leahy said that today's kids are experiencing the same degree of stress as the average psych patient in the 1950s. Postmodern thought has done this. You're seeing the outworking of postmodern thought that we bought into during the hippie generation in the 1960s, and it's come to fruit. And we've got a few generations since then, and every generation is taking it to a new level. My hope and prayer, if the Lord doesn't come back first, is that things get so bad that this young generation will get it turned around. That's what we're trying to produce here at Shepherd's Hill.
Right, and I do think that I see it exactly the same way. Unless the Lord comes first, a lot of things are going to crash and burn because they just don't work. Again, Shepherd's Hill Academy, junior high, high school. It is a place for kids who are troubled. It is a place for kids who are in trouble with the law. It is a place where they get separated from the prevailing culture and they get completely trained from God up, from Scripture up, with their entire lifestyle and mindset in a way that there's lasting fruit. Trace, maybe we can start this question here, and you can answer on the other side of the break. But the amount of kids diagnosed with ADD, ADHD, and related problems. Now, some of them, it's very, very young, and it's before they're fully immersed in our school systems and our digital environment. But I'm curious to know, as an educator, your take on that. Again, we'll ask that on the other side of the break, or you'll get to answer that. But is this something that we just never noticed before and now we're diagnosing it? Is it something that is triggered by the digital culture? Is it diet related? Is it parenting related? Is it demonic? Is it something else? We'll get Trace Embry's opinion. And then I just want to ask him about a meeting he was at when questions about gender identity came up. We'll cover all that when we come back with my guest, Trace Embry, founder and executive director of Shepherd's Hill Academy. The website to find out more, shepherdshillacademy.org.
Yeah.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. I'm speaking with Trace Embry, founder and executive director of an extremely innovative educational method where troubled kids are taken away out of their normal environment, live in conditions that would have been lived in a couple hundred years ago here in America, get trained in an accredited or recognized program, and leave the program with an understanding of God, with an understanding of history, with an understanding of what's right and what's wrong with America. And many of them go on to be world changers themselves, and it's a considerable personal cost that Trace has stepped out and done what he's doing. So this is a ministry. This is a calling. Trace, your opinion on the what appears to be a massive increase in things like ADD, ADHD. We're not accusing people. We're not pointing fingers. We know some folks from their earliest days have struggled, kids with autism and other issues, and it's been terribly trying on the family. So we're asking this question to be constructive, not destructive. But why the extreme prevalence? Was this always here? We didn't recognize it? Or is it a product of our culture, in your opinion?
Well, you know, I think probably a little bit of both, but more of the latter. You know, Aldous Huxley in 1931 wrote a book called A Brave New World about what technology was doing to us as human beings. And in the 1950s, he wrote a sequel of that book, and he said, it's happening faster than I thought. Now, in the 1950s, we weren't too technologically advanced compared to today. The degree of stimuli that our young people are getting is so overwhelming that the human brain was never designed. God never designed us to deal with this degree of stimuli this often. And Dr. Archibald Hart writes in his book, Thrilled to Death, that 80% of the American public, and probably 100% if you're a teenager, unless you're Amish, is dealing with a condition known as anhedonia. And a lot of doctors are falsely, or they just don't know anything about it. They know anhedonia as it relates to drug addiction, schizophrenia, and there's one other thing, depression. And that's the only way they know of the term anhedonia. But there's a 21st century anhedonia, and it basically works 180 degrees out. The anhedonia is now producing the schizophrenia, the drug addiction, and the depression. And it's from the overstimulation of digital technology that is rewiring the brain. China considers video games alone, their number one public health threat. And the American Academy of Pediatrics says, don't you dare put your kid in front of a TV before the age of two. Yet 90% of kids now have a digital history by the age of two. And so, and very limited TV between two and five. Now, we're just talking TV. We're not talking iPads and cell phones. And these parents are making horrendous mistakes by giving a small young child in those formative years an iPad, thinking they're getting ahead of the curve. And, in fact, they're developmentally delaying their children. We've got a kid that's going to be enrolling in Shepherd's Hill here next month, who I've been telling these parents for the last 10 years, you got to stop doing this. You can't be letting them have all this stuff, this and that and the other. Well, sure enough, he's going to be a student here next month.
Mm.
So it's like, because it's so ingrained in the culture, it's kind of like slavery. I call it eye slavery. And what's happening is we don't know that we're addicted to these things. We don't know that we're all anhedonic to a certain degree. And so consequently, we think it's part of the culture, just like the American South, where I live now. Hey, you know what? Slavery was just part of it. That's just the way things are done. And then it takes a handful of people to take it on the chin and be called nut jobs and, you know, the whole nine yards before the rest of the culture finally wakes up and smells the coffee.
Yeah, so true as all the larger points that you're making. I'm fully aware of the degree to which I've gotten used to being digitally connected. Many years ago, the late 70s, early 80s, when video sports games started coming out, you know, Atari, the games, but then there was a company called Intellivision, and they had these games that would be completely primitive for us now. I started playing them. You had to play them on your TV screen, and I actually got addicted to them. I mean, I really got into playing them. And when God really got hold of me very intensely in 82 and brought me back to a deeper devotion, I just quit playing them And then over the years, I thought they must be getting better and better and better and better and better. I thought, forget that, man. I can't even touch that. I don't want to think about it. That's me. I'm not saying that it's a sin for anyone to touch them. But I become aware of the fact that I'm used to just being connected online, emailing, texting, posting. And it's not even the other distractions. I'm not watching video stuff, a lot of it. I'm not playing video games at all. But that digital connection, and you realize to just stop and think and not be distracted is an art that many of us have lost. So how much more when look, a two-year-old intuitively can operate an iPhone, or an iPad.
And it's in their DNA.
Amazing. All right, Trace, I'm not sure if it was you or your colleague on the radio show that gave this anecdote, but we were talking about Bruce Jenner and reality is whatever you perceive it to be. It was either you or your colleague on the radio show who gave a shocking anecdote about being with several hundred educators or PhDs, whatever it was, when the question of gender came up. Could you recount that for our listeners?
Yeah, Shepherd's Hill Academy is a member of different organizations, and they're not all Christian organizations. They're kind of, for lack of a better term, trade organizations that help the industry as a whole become better. And so we do our best to pal around, with some of these folks. We can learn from them. All truth is God's truth, and they can certainly learn from us, although they don't choose to because we're in their eyes religious nut jobs. But I'm in a class that was titled a couple of them, how to deal with the LGBTQ community, and it's absolutely frightening. These are people who are all PhDs. They're program directors, they're therapists and doctors. They're the movers and shakers in the mental health field. These are the ones who are making these decisions, and they were hailing Bruce Jenner as a hero for coming out. And I couldn't contain myself. I had to basically speak up and say, "Listen, can I ask you something?" I said, "You guys are all well educated. You've got a guy here who, by your Bible, the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, which is the Bible of mental health for the last 40, 50, 60 years, I forget exactly how long, but in 1973 is when they finally took homosexuality out of the DSM as a mental illness. And I said, so you guys are following the lead, calling him a hero. This guy is obviously emotionally disturbed. He's on suicide watch as I speak. And you, like lemmings, are going to follow each other over a cliff and send our nation the same direction, influencing young people, giving dispensing medications, and calling someone like me. I'll be the next, the new DSM diagnosis, because I'll have to go into therapy for homophobia. And so I said, I want you guys to be thinking through this. And it's just incredible that they actually took the liberty to say that there are no more gender binaries, that we need to look at our sexuality as fluid, and that there could be, in that little piece you played, Rodney Dangerfield had a comedy skit. He said, "I have three kids, one of each." Well, that's not so funny anymore. I mean, that's a reality. And to me, when you allow a 6-year-old or an 8-year-old or even a young teenager to say, "Hey, I want to start getting hormone shots because I feel I'm a boy or girl," they're not even taking into consideration the cultural influences, or maybe the influences of two parents that really wanted a girl over a boy, and this poor child goes through this system of transformation. And to keep in mind, the frontal lobe in the brain, where the action and consequence part of the brain is at, isn't even fully developed until an individual is 25 years old. So how do they even have the mental capacity to make decisions like this? We have messed with God's ecosystem, and God's ecosystem is going to be messing with us.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Trace, if folks are listening and they say, "Boy, I wonder if this might be something that my kid needs to get involved with," or they're thinking of a friend and they think, "Boy, this kid's in trouble right now," and maybe Shepherd's Hill Academy, which is there to transform the lives of teens in crisis, that this might be the place for them, and they want to look into this. Do they just go to the website? Is that the best thing to do?
Yeah, and there's another website that I'll give you, helpmytroubledteens.org.
shepherdshillacademy.org. It'll take you to shepherdshillacademy.org, but no one knows how to spell Shepherd's Hill Academy. So over the radio, I just give helpmytroubledteen.org. And they can go to licensedtoparent.org, too, licensedtoparent.org, and hear our radio archives where we talk about these types of things every day on the radio.
All right, so folks, write this down. Give the website once again for folks that can't spell Shepherd's Hill Academy. Give us the website once again, Trace.
It's helpmytroubledteen.org, helpmytroubledteen.org, and then the radio broadcast is licensedtoparent.org.
All right, Trace, thanks for all you're doing. I wish I had time to hear the whole story, especially how it impacted your family directly, but God bless you. May you bear much lasting fruit.
God bless you, Dr. Bunch. Keep up the good work.
All right, thanks.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know what I find really fascinating? So I had a guest on, Joshua Charles, in the first hour, talking about the Founding Fathers. And he brought up a book by Neil Postman, Amusing Ourselves to Death, a book I got a few years ago. Then in this hour, Trace Embry talking about children's education and what kids are exposed to today, and in the process mentioned a similar book to the Neil Postman book, Amusing Ourselves to Death. And in the Neil Postman book, there is a reference to, I forget if it's in the book itself or the son of the original author gives this anecdote, but an exercise that this professor, so either the author or the son of the author, would do every year, which is have his students take 24 hours and completely get disconnected from the wired world and the digital world. And that would mean no cell phone, no computer, no tablet, no texting, nothing, and probably no TV or movies or anything like that, probably that as well, just for 24 hours. And some of the college kids said it is the most difficult thing they ever did in their lives. Some said it was life-changing and wonderful. What if, as families, we did that, first as a trial basis, but then perhaps on a weekly basis and committed to doing things together? That would be pretty challenging, huh? But just as a trial basis for 24 hours, but it's got to be 24 hours where you can be involved with your kids, not just leave them in a room sitting at, looking at the wall and say, okay, read for 8 hours. But what would happen to us as the parents if we disconnected as well? My traditional Jewish friends do that every Sabbath, complete disconnecting for 24 hours. And for them, they would say it is a lifeline. Something to think about, no? Let me grab a call from Aaron in Greensboro. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. Giving honor to my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, to the Father. And I thank God for you, Dr. Brown, and your insight and your knowledge in God. It's definitely an honor, so I thank you for having me on today.
Well, thank you.
What I wanted to address, I got on a little late, just got in my car, and you know, it was the LBG chief talk. And, you know, a lot of parents don't realize when they're even you know, entertaining that in their children, you know, I feel like, you know, you can tell them what you think, sir, but I feel like, you know, people are telling them, I mean, pretty much planting a seed in their children's minds that God made a mistake. When you say that, oh, I feel like I'm a male, but I feel like I'm a female, but what you're ultimately saying is, you know, God made a mistake, you know what I mean? And how he created me, I feel like I'm a girl on the inside, or a male on the inside, I'm a female, you know, and that's some insight that my uncle gave me as well, because I was a little more harsh about it at first. You know, at first my original opinion was, well, if you're saying that, you know, and as far as, you know, the homosexual lifestyle, that you're a male and you're attracted to the male, and that's an abomination, and you felt like you were born that way, you know, are you saying that God is a homosexual, you know? But my uncle had to correct me on that. He's a great man of God. He had to correct me. You know,
we want to start with compassion for someone who's struggling. In other words, a four-year-old kid who believes that she's a girl, even though she's actually a boy, she's not making a conscious choice, you know, I'm going to join some radical activist agenda and act this out. She's obviously, or that boy is obviously struggling. The same way when a 10 or 11-year-old or a 12-year-old starts to realize, well, I'm not attracted to the opposite sex. Is there something the matter with me? And then 13, 14, they start to have sexual thoughts towards the same sex. They're troubled by that. Like, what's going on? So you got good counsel there, absolutely, Aaron, that we start with compassion. But, yeah, we're fundamentally saying, if we are believers and saying that God is the one who created us, then if we say, okay, here's a child born blind, we recognize something is wrong, that there's a handicap, and by God's grace, we want to try to overcome that handicap. We don't celebrate blindness and say the whole world has to, you know, now function with Braille. We say, okay, this is a handicap. How can we help this individual to overcome that handicap? The same way, if there's a child, a boy who's convinced that he's trapped in a girl's body, we don't want to celebrate that and say, okay, he actually is a girl, and now everyone has to recognize that in the bathrooms for other children. They have to recognize that. We want to say, okay, there's a problem here. How can we get to the root of it and help overcome it? But Aaron, for sure, if we are now bombarding our kids through the media and celebrating Bruce/Caitlyn Jenner and saying that you know, we don't want to get caught up in the gender binary of male, female. I just saw a headline saying the end of male and female in children's clothes. You know, try to deconstruct that. Of course there's going to be more gender confusion. And then you add in no difference between a man and a woman and versus two men or two women and so on and so forth. And a kid doesn't need a mom and a dad. Two moms or two dads are the same thing. You better believe it's going to sow confusion. But the fact is, it's ultimately going against the very laws and norms that God established, and therefore cannot prosper long-term. You cannot assault gender in society and thrive long-term in society, because it just doesn't work like that. But thank you, sir, for the call and your honor for the Lord and your kind words towards me. Much appreciated. All right. I was going to give out the phone number again out of habit, but no reason to do that because I can't take any calls right now anyway. You say, what do I do? I don't know how to work this out. Okay, Supreme Court's made a horrific ruling. Right now, we can't change that, maybe long term, but right now, that's the ruling. So, obviously, from my perspective, we don't accept it. We don't recognize it as being right, that you cannot redefine marriage no matter who you are or what you claim to be. But how do we live? How do we live this out? What are the strategies? How do we live this out long term? Can we have hope? Should we have hope? That's what I address in my new book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, where homosexual activism is really going and how to turn the tide. It's a hardcover volume. It's almost 300 pages, so it's beautifully produced, reads clearly, tons of documentation in it. Many things you've heard me talk about on the radio, expanded form here in the book, all carefully documented, quote after quote, illustration after illustration. I'll demonstrate in the book why I believe that gay activism has within itself the seeds of self-destruction and why God's principles are lasting principles. If Jesus does not come first, we will see these principles outlast the gay revolution here in America. It's inevitable. And I lay out 8 principles for long-term successful living here in God, regardless of which way the culture goes. So what we do, the very first printing, and only with the first edition, first copies that we get in, I will sign them, and they are numbered. So the only numbered signed copies you can get are when the book is first printed, and we'll do it for the first 100 or 200 or 300, depending on demand, $50, postage paid. So it's a collector's item for you. You get all the contents of the book, but in a special way. And it's a great blessing for us because you're standing with us and helping us get the message out. To order, the book comes out early September, so we're doing it now, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Once more, 1-800-278-9978, or find out more at AskDrBrown.org. My bottom line is, parents, let us replace the digital age with truth and wisdom from above.